Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious, very effervescent, and bubbly and dimply, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Well, I'm just happy to be right here back at WGN, where we feel like we just left about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, and we have a full three-hour show tonight. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
We have Roger Badish, and we have Esmeralda Leon up there in the news and traffic hut, and then we have the great Shantae Garth is our producer in the booth, and tonight we're going to play Suspense from 1944, then it's The Life of Riley from 1948, and then Tales of the Texas Rangers from 1951. We're also going to play our new game, Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. Want to tell our listeners all about it?
Sure. We are going to let you know what movie it's from. We are going to take a caller, and then I'm going to give you three quotes, one of which is actually from the movie, two of which are not. You will guess which one is from the movie. I will ask Carl to guess which one is from the movie as well, see if he agrees with you or not. Then Shantae will play the actual clip, and you'll find out if you were right or you weren't. Either way, you are a winner, and the winner tonight will get a Luminati's gift certificate for $25.
Oh,
so
wow.
We hope you'll play with us.
Very cool. All right, what is the movie?
The movie is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, Clint Eastwood movie. No, not Clint
yes.
Eastwood.
Yep.
Is he in that movie?
He sure is.
Right, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
he
that's
sure
right.
Is.
He was the good. And then I think Eli Wallach was the ugly. And then the bad guy was, I'm trying to think. Okay, it's been a while since I saw that movie.
Yeah.
All right, so if you want to give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. Play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote with us, and we'll be right back to play after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
So thank you, Roger, for that announcement. We have Mark on the line who's going to play with us tonight. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Mark.
Glad to hear from you. Where are you calling from, Mark?
I'm calling from Hanover Park, Illinois.
Great. Well, we're glad you called in. I'm going to give you three quotes. You tell me which is the right one from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, okay?
Okay.
Number one, civil wars leave nothing but tombs. Number two, 84 years ago. Number three, the blue, the gray, the civil war.
Number three.
Number three, the blue, the gray, the civil war.
Hmm.
All right, Carl.
I'm going to disagree with Mark, although he sounds like a very smart man. And I will say number one.
So you think it's civil wars leave nothing but tombs?
Yeah.
All right, Shantae, let's hear it.
The blue. The gray. The civil war.
Mark, you made my day because you picked the right answer and Carl did not. So that's exactly how I was hoping things
would go. Mark, she's so happy when she stumps me.
No, I'm not only happy that I stumped him, I'm happy that you got it correct. So, Mark, you won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Congratulations, you were the best. You are our
very
first.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, doesn't it? You were the very first person to actually have gotten the correct answer. So thank you so much.
Way to go, Mark. I was right. I was right about one thing. I was right about one thing, Mark. Mark is a smart guy.
Thanks
a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Lisa, great job. Stump me. I'm 0 for 2.
That's right, and we're going to keep track of that.
0 for 2. Wow.
Yeah, well, you've got 2 more tries.
All right, well, folks, do text into us. We love getting your texts. 312-981-7200. We're here till 2 a.m. We love getting your texts. 312-981-7200. Time now, though, for suspense. Let's go back to March 30th, 1944. This is called Cat and Mouse, and it stars Sonny Tufts. Here's part one of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Roma Wines presents Suspense. Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Salud.
Your health, senor.
Roma Wines toast the world. The wine for your table is Roma Wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is the man in black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Sonny Tufts in a suspense play that tells of a murder in Boston and of perilous adventure in Vermont's snow-covered hills. And so with Cat and Mouse and with the performance of Sonny Tufts as John Guthrie, an engineer, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
W1QXL, W1QXL, W1QXL. This is W1RBX calling W1QXL, W1QXL. This is WIR, Mont Carr, Vermont, calling and standing by.
W1RBX, W1RBX. This is W1QXL in Boston, returning. Hiya, Guthrie, how you been? Signal's clear, good signal. Come in.
W1QXL, W1QXL, W1RBX back. Hello, Lockwood. I'm fine. Signal's good up here. I got lots to tell you. Been trying to get in touch with you for the last couple of hours. Where you been? Out to dinner with Valentine? Go ahead.
Sorry, Guthrie. I haven't seen Val today. She hasn't answered her phone. Guess she's awful tired of picking it up and hearing me on the other end proposing. Anyhow, I've been working hard. Oh, had a little excitement here at the laboratory an hour or so ago. Thought we had a prowler on the grounds. But guess it was a false alarm. Nerves, I guess. What's your news, Guthrie? I've got a bit for you myself, but let's hear yours first. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as far as I'm concerned, kiddo, you can set up a date for demonstration for the Army Signal Corps and the Naval Ordnance people just as soon as you like. We're in the clear now for keeps. I got the last bug out of the screen this morning, and it ought to make the prettiest little image you ever saw. And if the brass hats put the steam on, I don't see why it shouldn't be in there fighting in a couple of months. Now, let's hear about you. Go ahead.
Boy, that sounds great. Hold it, Guthrie. Something going on here. Keep listening. I'll be back in a second. Who is it? Who's out there? Who's there? Get out from there or I'll shoot. Come out. Stop. Stop.
What is it, Lockwood? Howard, what's the shooting? Is that you coughing? Lockwood spoke of you so often.
Howard spoke of me? Do
well,
you?
You were engaged to be married, weren't you?
No, I was fond of him, but never that way.
He told me, that is, he said...
Then you were his collaborator. Oh, please, Mr. Guthrie, you can trust me. I need help. They all say his death was an accident. The coroner, the newspapers, the police. But I know it wasn't.
How do they say it happened?
Oh, an explosion in his laboratory. Chemicals he was using in his experiments.
Nonsense. Explosion. There wasn't anything more explosive in Lockwood's lab than a package of matches.
Then you were his collaborator. Oh, please, trust me.
Lockwood was murdered. I know it.
You think so, too, then?
Yes.
Well, then our job is to prove he was murdered.
No, I'm sorry, Val. There's something more important that comes first. When they killed Lockwood, they stole half of our... Well...
Your invention? But half an invention is worthless.
But I have the other half.
In other words...
Yeah. I'm next. We can count on that.
But they don't know who you are.
Maybe not yet. That was why Lockwood kept calling me Frank when he was talking to me near the end. Didn't want to give my name away to them.
And you've no idea who they are? Just something we could start on?
Well, just one thing. That night, the night he was killed, we were talking a shortwave, and he'd been bothered by a prowler. He spoke of it. Why, I even heard the fellow in the air. He was...
Oh, that phone. Excuse me a second. Hello? Yes? Oh, Dr. Borbert. Yes, it's nice of you to call me back, and thank you so much for sending Dr. Vaughn to see me. He certainly is... Dr. Vaughn. But you sent him to see me about Dr. Lockwood. About Dr. Edmund Vaughn? You're positive? I see. Well, thank you anyway. Bye.
What's up?
Someone just before you came, and Dr. Edmund Vaughn said he was with the coroner's office, called on me.
And the coroner's office never heard of him, is that it?
Never.
Uh-huh. Who was he? I mean, what did he look like? Would you recognize him if you saw him again?
Well, he was just a middle-aged fellow. Poor man had a terribly bad cough, one of the really hacking coughs.
A cough?
Yes.
It's the same one. He came to Howley's lab the night of the killing. I heard him.
You're sure?
Positive. You see, it fits. He was looking for me. Figured I'd come here to see you. He wants my half an invention. Well, Val, they need what I've got, and I've got to get back what they've stolen, so...
Where are you going?
Skiing.
What?
I'm going back to Vermont to go skiing. I'll send you a card from the Phoenix Hotel.
Next up is Sunbury, Vermont. Sunbury!
Bring me an orangeade, Porter. Well, hello. You're new up here.
Beg your pardon?
You're going to the Phoenix Hotel, of course. Get so you know a skiing fan when you see one. I know most all the Phoenix crowd. This must be your first trip to the Phoenix, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Name's O'Brien.
John Guthrie.
Excuse me. Do they serve drinks in this lounge car?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you're new, too.
Well, yes, I've only been in the States a few weeks.
Oh, no. I mean new to our weekend skiing contingent.
Skiing contingent?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I'm O'Brien. This is Mr. Guthrie. What did you say your name was?
Well, I...
Thanks, Porter, thanks. And bring me a couple more cigars, will you?
Here, take one of mine while you're waiting, Mr. O'Brien.
Oh, thank you. Now, that's what I like about the Phoenix crowd. They're sociable. Everybody pals with everybody else.
Sounds very pleasant.
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, Mr., well, anyway, you wait. By Monday, everyone in the place will be calling you by your first name.
Oh, really? Well, I guess I'd better be getting back to my compartment. Very happy to have met you, gentlemen. See you later.
Weird duck. Unsociable like. Now I always say, you take a fellow that won't mix.
Be quiet a minute.
What's the matter with you, Mr. Guthrie? You look like you'd seen a ghost.
Yeah, that's the first portion of Suspense. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Roger, Lisa brought some fruit, and I'm trying to get a piece of fruit, and she's taking the fruit away from me. She's like...
What, is she teasing you with it?
She's teasing me.
No, it's just that he eats it so fast and furiously that there's nothing...
Can I eat it at my own pace?
No, because there's one bucket for both of us. Roger, why are you agreeing with him?
Wait, one piece at a time.
That's what I...
He's not hogging the whole bucket, is he?
Yes, he is.
No.
That's what I'm telling
Roger,
you.
Roger,
he's stuffing in his mouth as fast as he possibly can, and I'm like, whoa, save some for me.
Okay,
his mouth is full right now. He can barely speak.
I would bring you some fruit, right?
Okay, I didn't bring it for him. I didn't bring him a basket of fruit.
And then you were putting a fork in there. Would I be pulling it away from you?
Well, yes, I'd be putting a fork into just one piece of fruit, wouldn't
exactly.
I?
Exactly. And then
so that's what he's doing.
No, he did that. And then the next and the next. See what
well,
I'm saying?
Well, he eats fast. He's hungry.
He's a little overzealous.
She's like an Indian giver.
I didn't give. Didn't
she
give
just
anything.
Put it within reach of him.
No, I didn't.
And he's using a big fork.
It certainly is.
I got one and a half pieces of fruit, and she's pulling it away from me.
Well, how many are left?
Not very nice, Lisa.
Not too many.
Not very nice.
Share and share alike, children. Come on now.
Oh, gosh. Daddy, she won't let me have any
Why are you
fruit.
Don't
with
make
him?
Me reach back there.
Daddy. Daddy Baddish. All right, we're listening to Suspense, one of the best mystery series of the golden age of radio. Sonny Tufts is the star of Cat and Mouse. Let's go back to 1944 for the conclusion of Suspense.
Good evening, Mr. Guthrie. I trust you're feeling refreshed now, sir.
Yeah, 3 hours sleep and a long walk was just what I needed. Any messages for me?
No, sir. Good evening, Mr. O'Brien.
Hello there, hello. Ah, there you are. I've been looking for you everywhere. Want to introduce you around to some of the folks here.
Well, thanks, Mr. O'Brien. I would kind of like to get acquainted.
Why, sure. Be sociable. You see the old lady in the wheelchair? That's Mrs. Garvey.
Mrs. Garvey, eh?
Yeah. They're new here, too. Legs paralyzed, poor soul. Always sits and knits. The husky man's her husband. Well, hello there, folks.
Hello, Irishman.
Well.
Feels good here.
So you're our newcomer?
Only one of them, yeah. And this sweet soul, Mr. Guthrie, is Mrs. Garvey.
You've excused my not shaking hands. I'm all tied up in this ball of wool. When you can't walk, you compensate by keeping the hands over busy.
Well, it's very considerate of you to make me feel at home here, Mrs. Garvey and Mr. Garvey.
Surprised a strong young man like you isn't in the army.
Really, Daddy. You have to excuse him, Mr. Guthrie. Nosy and fresh.
Well, there's no harm done. See, I'm an engineer and they've deferred me. There he is. I'm doing my share as is, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm a promoter myself.
Here, Daddy. Hold out your hands. That's it. Now, don't wiggle or my wool will slip.
And I'm not in the army because I'm too old. Took advantage of the over 38 law. I'm 59.
He's a card, isn't he?
Sure is. Just what is a promoter, Mr. Garvey?
Careful, Daddy. Those knitting needles almost stuck you then. They're special needles, Mr. Guthrie. Sharp. Why, they could cut ice or pierce wood.
Or kill a man.
Yes.
Yes, I'll be careful, Mother. So you're an engineer, Mr. Guthrie. I knew an engineer. Fine boy.
Oh, I remember him. He was a dear boy.
Anybody I know?
No. Thought I'd try to get him to come up here. Was working on an experiment I was very much interested in. Wouldn't do business with me, though.
Yeah?
Now, bring your hands together, Daddy. That's a good boy. Fine. Daddy has such big, strong hands, yet they're so gentle.
Well, the boy's dead now. Met with an accident, I think.
Really? What did you say his name was?
Howard Lockwood.
Yes, Lockwood. He had a collaborator I've been trying to locate. He and I could really have a long talk.
Say, by the way, Guthrie, have you seen that bird, the unsociable one we came up in the train with?
No, I haven't.
He's probably a big businessman. He seems so nervous. I tell you, it doesn't pay. Be sociable. Business can always wait.
Definitely.
When I see how little you fellas get out of life, I thank heavens I have the sense to retire.
How long have you been retired, Mr. O'Brien?
Be 4 years in June.
Mm-hmm. You were in business for yourself?
No, I was a professional man.
Oh, I see. Medicine?
No, detective. I was with the FBI.
Come in. Well, Guthrie, come in. Feel just like a nice sociable talk. Sit down.
Mr. O'Brien, I'm in trouble and I need expert help. And you are an FBI man. You can help me.
Uh-oh. I was afraid of that. I'm sorry, Guthrie. I'm retired. Too old for the game. You get a hold of the Boston office. They'll get someone up to help you in a jiffy. Call Jack Porter. He's in charge now. They'll mention my name.
But there's no time now. You see, Boston is 6 hours from here. I need help right now.
Oh, take it easy, boy. Relax. I suppose you're another engineer with some gadget that's going to win the war. That's a familiar one.
Mr. O'Brien, this is serious. There's a murder in this hotel, and if I don't get him, he'll get me.
Now, take it easy.
If you'll just give me a hand.
You know, I felt there was something going on here this weekend. Things weren't sociable like they usually are.
Mm-hmm. What have you noticed?
Nothing in particular. Just people seemed to act funny. You take that Garvey and his old wife, and that bird with a cough that came up on the train with us. What's he up to, eating his meals in his room?
Look, will you help me, Mr. O'Brien? I do have an invention, as it happens, and...
Oh, excuse me a minute. Hello? Mr. Guthrie? Yes, he's here. The gentleman in 421. Right now. Very well. Goodbye. It's for you. Party in 421 wants you to step in and see him.
That's him. That fake Dr. Vaughn. Well, this is it. And you refuse to help.
Oh, now, look. I'd like to, I guess, but... After all, if...
All right, O'Brien, but look, just this. 421 is right down the hall. And if I'm not back in 10 minutes, will you knock on the door?
Oh, that much. I'll do for you.
John?
Val. Valentine, what are you doing here? We agreed that
not
you...
the hall, John. Open your door quickly before we're seen together.
Look, Val, I've got something important to do. Wait in my room for me. If I can only find a key.
The door's open.
It's funny. I locked it.
Look!
The room's been searched. My papers, the pillows, my trunk.
Oh, John, they know you.
Where is it?
You didn't bring the blueprints with you here.
I'm not that dumb. Well, it's gone.
What?
My gun.
Oh, John, I'm afraid.
I feel as if I'd known you for a long time.
My dear.
Well, you know I love you, don't you?
John, we shouldn't talk about that now.
But, you see, I've been in love with what I think you are. I've only known you for 2 days, and...
What are you trying to ask me, John?
Why you came when we agreed that you shouldn't.
Because I was afraid that you...
And why I find you hiding near my door and find the door unlocked when I had locked it only 10 minutes ago, and then I come into my room and I find this.
Oh, John, don't. Please don't. I came because I wanted to help you. I felt that if you were in danger, it wasn't right for me to stay home, safe, not knowing.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Val. I trust you. Look, stay here. I'm going down the hall. Somebody's waiting.
Oh, don't go, John. Don't, please. I'm afraid for you.
You got a gun, Val?
Yes, I thought I might need it.
Now, give it to me. Now, kiss me.
Oh, John, I...
Wait here. If I'm not back in 10 minutes, get the police.
Where are you going?
Room 421, to talk to a man about his cough.
I'm going with you.
This is his room.
I'm going in with you.
You're staying outside. Step back. Don't let him see you. Open up.
His door is open, too. There on the rug, the body.
Dr. Vaughn, he's dead.
Look, look at the gun. He's holding it. He killed himself.
You mean he's supposed to look as if he killed himself? He was shot in the back of the head, a bit too neat.
What do you mean?
That gun in his hand. It's mine.
Then if he wasn't the murderer, who was he? Oh, John, the gun. They'll think that...
Shh, take it easy. That gun may come in handy. Come in.
Well.
O'Brien, look here.
What?
This gun's mine. It's a plot to frame me.
What? That's not your killer, Guthrie. That's Hilary Lawrence of Scotland Yard. Assigned to this case because his government, like ours, is keenly interested in your invention. I should have listened to you before, Guthrie.
You know about it, then?
I checked. Called FBI office in Boston. Talked to Porter. Yes, your Dr. Vaughn was Hilary Lawrence of Scotland Yard.
He was the one you heard in Lockwood's lab the night he was killed.
He must have got a little too close in the tail of the real killers.
Mr. Garvey was... Well, I really don't know enough to talk. I better shut my big mouth. But I think I know.
You know the killer?
No, but I have no proof. Without proof, Guthrie, you'll be held for the murder of Lawrence.
That's obvious.
We've got to get our other evidence before someone finds the body.
Yeah. You know, there must be a hideout around here they operate from.
There's a cabin about a mile to the left from the top of the ski jump. I saw it one day when I got lost. I've got a funny hunch it might be the place. If we can get there and find something involving them before the hotel people find this body and arrest you, we'll be...
Well, what are we waiting for? Come on, let's go. Come on back to my room, Val. See you downstairs in 5 minutes, O'Brien.
If we don't find proof, John, what then?
Then we get murdered or get held for murder. Cabin's dark.
Yeah, one of these keys must fit. Ah, that one does it. Softly now. Mr. Guthrie, I'll take Miss Ames's gun. You're too impulsive. Thanks. Well, there's no one here. Draw the shade, please.
I better keep a lookout on the road. Someone may come.
That's a good idea. Now, this is what I call a real sociable evening.
Look, a note. And it's addressed to me.
Well, we're in the right place, then. Read it.
Guthrie, $200,000 in cash for your blueprints, and you can get the cash first, wherever you designate, with no questions asked as to what government gets them. Why
Sir,
those...
Sir Calmy, my boy, you don't have the prints here, do you?
No, they're in a safety vault, and my name is San Francisco.
What's that there, that panel?
It's a radio rig, sending and receiving.
Someone's coming.
Who? Quick, turn off that light.
Take a look, John, here, through the window.
It's Garvey, and he's alone.
Alone? Are you sure? Where'd he put that wife of his? Take another look.
He's alone, all right.
I knew she was a phony. She does too much knitting. I wonder where she is. All right, Miss Ames, out you go, quickly. Get to the foot of the road before he does. It's your car, understand?
Yes.
You're lost, looking for a way back to the Phoenix. Delay him from coming in here.
Right.
I'll go outside. You search the place, O'Brien, with Val.
Now, let the girl go. Her best weapon is her charm. Hurry now. Stall him as long as you can. Good luck. Don't worry. I can see them from here.
Look at it. Short wave. Yeah. With this outfit, Garvey could hear Lockwood and me talking over our work.
Yeah. Pretty clever operator, I'd say.
Can you see Val?
Yeah. She's getting near him now. Brave girl, that one.
The best.
There she is. He's seen her.
Let me have a look.
See them? Over my finger, between that row of trees.
Yeah, she's talking to Garvey now. She'll stall him.
Yeah.
Hey, come on, O'Brien. Let's start searching his
place. Wait a minute. Look, they're coming this way. The two of them. Well, I should have known.
Val? Oh, no, it can't be.
Sorry, Guthrie, but you're seeing right. The girl's with Garvey.
But she loves me. I know it. She's honest. I swear it.
They're coming up the path. You stand behind the door. I'll stand up on the balcony and cover them from behind with a gun.
You all set, Guthrie?
All set.
You spring out on them as they close the door, and I'll cover you from here.
Val, Garvey, duck. He's got the gun. Above.
Oh, my arm.
O'Brien.
All of you reach. Don't stoop for that gun, Guthrie. Up with your arms. Three of you are going to join the late Mr. Lockwood. The girl and Mr. Garvey of the FBI who poked his nose in a book too far.
You're out of your mind, O'Brien. What will you get by killing us? I've got the information you want, and if I'm dead, you'll never get it.
I'm fighting for my life now, not your invention. With you three out of the way, I've got a chance. A fire in this lovely cabin will do the job nicely. Now get into that closet, all of you. Get started.
You're missing one, O'Brien. My wife.
I'm not worrying about that,
O'Brien. Drop your gun, Mr. O'Brien. That point you feel in your back is my knitting needle. Drop it. Remember, it can crack ice, pierce wood, or kill a man.
Okay, Mrs. Garvey. Certainly nice to see you again.
Nice job, Guthrie. You tipped us off just in time. Sit down, Mother. You look tired. You must be standing behind the kitchen door for an hour.
Look here.
Be quiet, Mr. O'Brien. Formerly of the FBI. Kicked out for improper conduct, he was. The service has had its eye on you ever since, my friend.
Yeah, you see, you made a slight error, O'Brien, when you said you'd call the porter of the Boston FBI office. The outgoing lines from the hotel have been out of order since 5 o'clock.
Oh, your arm, Daddy. Here, let me bandage it.
Better get going and have it looked after.
Oh, it's bleeding. I think I'm going to faint.
Faint ahead, Val. I got a pair of arms that aren't doing a thing.
And so closes Cat and Mouse, starring Sonny Tufts, tonight's tale of suspense. Mr. Tufts appeared through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and will soon be seen in the Paramount picture, I Love a Soldier.
Few spots in the globe boast the unique and perfect combination of nature's gifts, which makes possible truly good wine. Wine which the whole world can enjoy. But wine experts will tell you that among these fortunate spots, none can surpass the vineyards of our own California. From these renowned California vineyards come Roma wines. Wines so perfect in flavor, so delightful, that they are enjoyed in many countries of the world. To us in America, Roma wines are an everyday treat. For we may buy them at an astonishingly low price, since we pay no import duties or expensive shipping costs. Do you enjoy a delicious tangy sherry? Well, tomorrow treat yourself to a glass of Roma California sherry. We're sure you will agree that you have never tasted finer. With your first sip, you'll understand why Roma wines are America's largest selling wines. I'll repeat the name, R-O-M-A, Roma wine. Tomorrow, ask your dealer for your favorite type of Roma wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Sonny Tufts, and I hope you enjoyed our suspense play this evening. I know I had a good time. I'm looking forward to next week's show, and I know you must be, when that remarkable actress, the Academy Award winner, Madame Katina Paxinu, will be the star of Suspense.
Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Katina Paxinou in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wine. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Who is Katina Paxinou? I don't know who that is.
That's a friend of mine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's who's going to be the star of Suspense next week. But that was Cat and Mouse from March 30th, 1944, starring Sonny Tufts. A good tale well calculated to keep us in suspense. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa Wolf, we are here till 2 a.m. playing all your favorite radio shows. And you know what? Some people, I think, still don't realize we're on Saturday and Sunday. We're on two nights a week, folks. Because every once in a while, someone will say, oh, yeah, I listen to you on Sunday nights all the time. And I'll be like, yeah, but we're on Saturday and Sunday. And they're like, really?
That's a good story.
And then they start backing up and trying to get away from me. I'm like, no, really, where are? And I follow them wherever they go. And they're trying to get in their car and trying to take off.
Kind of the stalker mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, folks, we're on Saturday and Sunday playing all your favorite classic radio shows. You name it, we have it. In fact, in our next hour, it's The Life of Riley with William Bendix's Riley. And then third hour, Tales of the Texas Rangers starring Joel McRae. And that show was created by Stacy Keach's dad, Stacy Keach Sr. You know?
I do know that.
Yeah. And Stacy Keach's dad was one of the kind of supporting players on Get Smart. He was the professor on there. He was
Remember the show.
Yeah, Get Smart. Yeah, remember that?
I do.
Would you believe?
Yeah, would you believe? I was gonna tell Roger something. Roger, what do you think of this idea? We were thinking of having T-shirts made.
Mm-hmm. WGN Radio Theater T-shirts. Yeah.
T-shirts.
To be clear.
And I wonder if we should have some
just plain T-shirts.
Just some T-shirts.
Do you think it should have some classic radio stars on it too, or just?
Ooh.
Yeah, I think it.
So in the middle, like an old radio, and then in black and white, kind of in a semicircle on either side, like headshots of some of the biggest stars of classic radio.
Right.
You know what?
And then
to get
letters,
headshots.
In letters over it, WGN Radio Theater. Yeah.
We probably won't get headshots because, you know, cost effectiveness here.
No,
you can design it as one page.
I don't feel that I would wear the T-shirt with other people's headshots all over it.
The other people are the classic radio stars.
Yeah, Jack Benny.
No, I understand.
No one would wear a picture with mine.
I do want to celebrate classic radio, and I think we should do it through a T-shirt, but might take more discussion on a T-shirt that will actually people would like to wear out and about.
This is what happens to me and Lisa all week long.
Wait, I think this
I'll
is a
call
discussion
Lisa.
You two should be having.
You are absolutely
alone.
Right.
Roger, I'll call Lisa, and I got to make sure I don't call before like 12:30 because she's sleeping.
Yeah, right.
But
so
I'll
noon?
Call her. No. I'll call her during the week, and I'll be like, "Hey, Lisa, what do you think of this idea? I'm thinking about it." And she, no, I don't like that.
Wow, what a killjoy.
No.
Roger, you woke up on the wrong side today. You're supposed to be on my side.
You know what, Lisa? I only have one side to wake up on. The other side's the wall.
Okay, well.
And I wake up on the wall side way too often.
Maybe you should wake up on the wall a few extra times. anyhow, we're talking about the idea of
I think it's great.
T-shirts,
and that way
some
we can,
type of classic
radio
T-shirt.
You should have a whole like store of classic radio. Yeah, I know you got the store already, but I'm talking about apparel.
Yeah.
Add it to the mix.
That's what we were thinking. We were thinking
hats,
of some
T-shirts.
You think hats and T-shirts and
underwear?
What about hoodies?
I was thinking of underwear.
Well, hoodies would be nice.
Yeah.
Underwear?
Yeah, Ellen sells underwear and socks. Why can't we?
Happy for her.
Because she's Ellen DeGeneres.
Exactly.
You got that right.
And we are the WGN Radio
Theater. All right, so we're toying with the idea of some wear some outerwear.
Where? Not outerwear. Or under. Or
maybe
over.
Like, I like the idea
anywhere.
Of a hoodie, you know, like a hoodie.
Hoodie's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lisa was like, no, no hoodies.
No, because they're really expensive.
What? So what?
Roger, they're would you spend $50 to buy a hoodie?
Yeah, yeah, why not? Of course.
From us, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to market. We're going to put them on there for what we're not. We don't want to make money on it. And if we do make money, we'll donate it to a charity.
The yeah. Carl
the charity of Carl Murray.
Yeah, my favorite charity. Me, myself, and
no,
I.
No, I'm we're not. Going to. I'm no. We would if we marked it up, we would give the money to charity.
Well, sure, that would be awesome. Yeah. And then yes, people would want to spend that kind of money to get that.
All right,
you've got to figure in
make
shipping
a shirt
costs,
for $10.
Right?
Sell it for $50.
Okay.
And then,
no, I'm kidding.
We're going to talk about that. I think it's something that people might appreciate.
I mean,
especially we can give them away as prizes.
If we mark them up at all, we should come up with a really good charity for
I don't think we should mark them up. I think
then
we should
just
sell them for what they cost.
But don't forget the cost for shipping also.
Well,
you've got to work that into that.
All right, we're thinking about it.
Well, we're talking about it. We can also give it as part of our giveaway. And they're already shipping, let's just say, the Twilight Zone CDs. We could throw in a T-shirt as well.
And when we have our meet and greets, we could give T-shirts away.
And I'm just putting this idea in Carl's head.
In Carl's head. Okay.
There's no more room. I don't have any room.
When you give away the T-shirts, think about one of those air guns.
Right. Shoot them out at the people.
Shoot them out at the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you would love that.
Yeah, there we go. I like that idea, Roger.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, and we're here till 2 a.m. This hour, it's The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. We'll also be tuning into Tales of the Texas Rangers with Joel McRae from 1951. All of it is brought to you by Cat's Pride, and we're going to play our Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Fight Club.
Fight Club. Oh, that was... Sean Penn? No. Was it Sean Penn? No.
I didn't see Fight Club.
I don't remember. No, it wasn't Sean Penn. Gosh, why? Oh, it was the guy married to Angelina Jolie. Brad Pitt.
Yes, yeah. That is right.
You know, his brother Arm's doing a lot of movies now.
Armpits.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a little slow on the button.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so the movie is Fight Club.
Yes,
the number
it
to
is.
Call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Play the game with us. We'll have caller number three, and we're going to give three quotes out. One will be correct, and hopefully I can get on the board here. I'm 0 for 2.
Yep, we're going to keep track of that,
Call
too.
Right now, 312-981-7200, third caller. We're going to take a break here for commercials, so we'll come back and play the game.
Get ready for a clean like you've never seen. Hi, this is Tonya Khoury of Green Tea Services. I promise you, carpet, tile, and hardwood floors cleaned like never before.
Service to a green tea.
Our Green Tea Services deep cleaning process leaves your carpets, tile, and hardwood floors cleaner and removes bacteria and mildew so your children can safely play on your green tea cleaned floor. Whether you have carpet, tile, or hardwood, call our Green Tea Crews with the green letter T on top of our trucks. They're known for courtesy and quality service.
Service to a green tea.
Clean up on savings. Call now. Get one room cleaned free. Plus, our 100% satisfaction green tea guarantee. For details on carpet, tile, and hardwood floor cleaning, call Green Tea now. Ask for our room cleaned free special. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA or greenteaservices.com.
Hi, this is Carl Amari. These classic radio shows are direct from master recordings and digitally remastered. We license these classic radio shows from the owners and estates for the privilege of using their master recordings as our source material so that we can pass that great sound quality on to you. Oh, you can find classic radio shows sold on the internet from companies that are not authorized to sell them, but you'll often be disappointed by the inferior sound quality. If you enjoy listening to and collecting great sound quality classic radio shows, we've set up up a website just for you at ClassicRadioStore.com so you can enjoy them anytime, anywhere. Log on to ClassicRadioStore.com to download your favorites to your smartphone, computer, or any listening device. We offer thousands of digitally remastered classic radio shows, uncut and unedited, including the original commercials, delivered to you instantly via digital download. Log on to ClassicRadioStore.com. That's ClassicRadioStore.com.
Hi, I'm Katherine Heigl, film and television actress and producer and CEO of the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation. 3.2 million cats enter shelters every year, and sadly, over half of them are euthanized. So now, when you buy a green jug of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light litter, we'll donate 1 pound of litter to shelters across the country. The dollars these shelters save on litter go directly towards saving cats' lives. Find out how you can help at catspride.com.
Your brain is an amazing thing, but as you get older, it naturally begins to change, causing a lack of sharpness or even trouble with recall. Thankfully, the breakthrough in Prevagen helps your brain and actually improves memory. The secret is an ingredient originally discovered in jellyfish. In clinical trials, Prevagen has been shown to improve short-term memory. Prevagen, the name to remember. Now available in stores everywhere. Statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Will the Kings hold court, or will LaVine and the Bulls wrap up their road trip with a W? Bulls, Kings, tonight at 9 on WGN-TV.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We've got Randy on the phone. Hi, Randy. Do we have Randy?
Randy, you there? Do you need me to put him on? Randy, are you there?
I think we lost Randy.
He's not there. Hello, Randy. I'm not sure. Let's see. Nope, we don't have him. Well, we'll have to get somebody else. Let's see. Do we have anybody else we can? Okay.
There we go.
A lot of people calling in.
There we go.
Lots and lots of people. All right, just put somebody on.
Oh, wow.
All right. Hello?
I kind of heard a click. I think Randy hung up. But we've got somebody new here. She's on the phone with somebody.
Well, just put them on. All right.
Let's
put on Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Bruce, you there? No, we lost him. All right.
What's going on here?
I don't know. All right, well, why don't we... we'll just wait another minute. We'll try to get somebody else on. I'm not sure what happened.
I can start with you, Carl, and you can give me a guess.
Yeah, but no.
All right.
All right, let's talk to Don. Hi, Don. Are you
there?
Hey, Don.
Hi, we got you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. We're glad you're playing with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Norwich.
Terrific. Don, I'm going to give you three quotes. One of these is from Fight Club. Two of them are not. You tell me which one is, and you're a winner, but you're a winner either way.
What are they going to win, by the way?
They're
going to
win a Twilight Zone, a four-CD set.
Yeah, there you go, Don.
All right, Don, quote number one. There's always a cause worth fighting for. Go find your cause. Number two, never stop fighting until you arrive at your destined place. Number three, each one of you has a homework assignment. You're going to start a fight with a total stranger.
Okay.
I'll go with two.
Number two, never stop fighting until you arrive at your destined place.
You know, Don sounds smart, but I'm not going to agree with Don.
All right. That did
not work well
for you last
Nothing
hour.
Nothing personal. I am going to say number three.
So you're going to say each one of you has a homework assignment. You're going to start a fight with a total stranger. Play it, Shantae.
Each one of you has a homework assignment. You're going to start a fight with a total stranger.
Wow, finally on the board.
Carl is on the board, but Don, you are a winner. Thank you for calling in and playing with us. So you still have
won the
Twilight Zone 4 CD set. So congratulations, and thank you again for playing
Way
Crack
to
the
go,
Quote
Don.
With us.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate
thank you.
You. All right, Don. Don wins some Twilight Zone. I finally get on the board.
You finally got one right.
Woo!
That was a tough one, right?
So I'm 1-3.
1-3.
Yeah, 1-3. All right, very good. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
Great job. All right, it is time now for the Life of Riley comedy series that came to radio. way, way back in 1941. Yeah, it was. And then it lasted until 1951, made a transition to television in 1948. William Bendix played Chester A. Riley, a devoted family man and airplane riveter. This series was created by a guy I got to be very good friends with in the last maybe 5 or 6 years of his life, Irving Brecker. What a great man. He created the series, The Life of Riley. He also wrote a lot of movies for the Marx Brothers and was really good friends with Groucho Marx. In fact, he attempted to create a series for Groucho Marx, and this was it. But for some reason, it didn't sell with Groucho Marx in the lead role. But then later, he reworked the series and cast William Bendix as Chester A. Riley. Became a big success in movies, TV, radio. And we have an episode for you now from September 10th, 1948. On this show, Riley believes that women enjoy housework. Ooh, that's not going to go over very well. Here's part one now of The Life of Riley.
It's new. It's amazing. It's Prell, P-R-E-L-L, Procter & Gamble's new Radiant Cream Shampoo in the handy tube. Prell brings you The Life of Riley. Prell, the shampoo that removes unsightly dandruff in as little as 3 minutes and leaves hair radiantly clean, radiantly lovely, presents The Life of Riley, with William Bendix as Riley. Deep down in his heart of hearts, Chester A. Riley loves marriage. But once a week, the male ego causes him to try and forget the trials and tribulations of being a husband and father, and reverts to bachelorhood. Tuesday night at 8, he and 4 of his cronies gather around a card table, and for the next 4 hours, they vainly attempt to delude themselves that they are once again free men.
You know, last week I lost a fortune. Okay, fellas, let's get the game going.
Well, hey, wait a minute. Henry ain't here yet.
Didn't you hear, Riley?
Hear what, Gillis?
Henry ain't with us no more.
Poor Henry. He was a prince of a fella. Yeah, we're sure gonna miss him.
Well, what happened? I didn't hear anything.
It happened very sudden.
Oh, no. You mean Henry's dead?
No, married.
Oh, that's too bad. But I still don't get it. Just because he got hitched, he can't come to the game. We're all married.
His ball and chain won't let him. He told me maybe in a couple of weeks he'll talk her around. But I'm dubious.
Henry's making a big mistake. He's a goner. With wives, you gotta break them in right from the start when they're young colts. You gotta keep a firm grip on the reins.
Well, I agree with you up to a point, Gillis, but you can't go too far. When you marry a girl, you ain't exactly getting a horse.
Oh, no. Maybe you didn't, but did you ever see my wife eat?
Well, personally, I got a wonderful wife in my Peg. We've been married 18 years, and I like her better all the time.
Yeah, your Peg is all right, if you happen to like a good-looking, pleasant type of woman.
Well, I guess us guys are lucky. That's because we got our wives trained.
Yeah, that's the ticket, Joe. And the women are happier that way, too.
There's a guy I know, married 20 years.
Yeah.
Every single night since they got married, he's been washing the dishes.
No kidding.
Honest. I was in their kitchen the other night, and I seen two aprons. One marked hers, and the other marked his.
Well, I heard worse things. I know a poor schmo. The minute the baby came, he did everything. He diapered it, he bathed it, he made the formula, he fed it the bottle.
Oh, go on.
On a level. Why, to this very day, the kid still calls him mama. deal of cards. I ante 1 cent. Oh, boy, what a rough day I had at the plant today.
Oh, you look tired, dear.
Yeah. Peg, darling, you want half the paper?
Oh, Riley, how can I read now? Can't you see I haven't finished the supper dishes?
Oh, yeah. Peg, you know something? Every night you're in the kitchen doing the dishes while I'm stretched out on the living room couch reading the paper. You know, that's selfish of me.
Oh, I don't mind.
No, it ain't fair. From now on, I'm reading here in the kitchen.
Ha, ha, ha. Are you sure I won't be in your way?
No, no, not at all. Just don't splash any water my way. Got on my new slacks. Let's see what's new in the world. 13-year-old Los Angeles youth elopes with 40-year-old divorcee. Junior!
I'm in my room, Pop.
Oh. Anybody with you?
What?
Oh, Riley, you must be out of your mind.
You can't be too careful.
All this sink is blocked again. Sometimes I could scream.
You're a lucky woman, Peg.
I am, huh?
Yes, sir. Just listen to this. Mrs. Franklin X. Partridge, permanent Pasadena matron, charging mental cruelty, was granted a divorce today from her husband, the well-known sportsman and banker. They had been married 18 years. The court awarded Mrs. Partridge $3,000 a month alimony. Poor woman.
Oh, stop. You're making me cry.
Oh, you don't know how lucky you are. Just compare yourself to this woman. After 18 years of marriage, what does she wind up with?
$3,000 a month.
Yeah, but look at you. You've been married just as long, and look what you've got. Me.
Yeah. You in a blocked sink.
Mental cruelty, baloney. It's obvious what's wrong here. This woman's in the beauty parlor all morning, racetrack all afternoon, cocktail parties, dinner parties, lunching parties, tea dances, trips to New York, Palm Springs, London, Paris. This woman's got nothing to do. She's in a rut.
Well, tell her to move over. I'd like to get in that rut.
Believe me, she'd be a lot happier if she had a husband and kids to cook for and dishes to wash and beds to make and rugs to vacuum and shirts to iron. Oh, Peg, you're a lucky woman.
I know. I'd give 3 cheers if I had the strength.
Oh, Mother.
Oh, what is it, Babsy?
Mother, that Cary Grant picture you've been wanting to see is playing around the corner.
Oh, I've been dying to see that movie.
Oh, we better hurry. The last showing goes on in 5 minutes.
Oh, well, I still got all these dishes to do. You better go yourself, dear.
No, no, no. You go, Peg.
Well, the dishes...
Now, don't you worry about the dishes.
Oh, thanks, dear.
Now, you go out and enjoy yourself. When you come back, you can do the dishes. Junior, where are you going with that wash tub?
I've got Marilyn Morris's dog out in the garage. I'm going to wash it for her.
Well, what for?
Well, so it'll be clean.
Well, why are you doing it?
Well, today Marilyn said she's my girl. Steady, she said, so... Well, I thought it'd be nice if I helped her out.
What kind of a boy are you? Are you trying to make Marilyn unhappy?
Unhappy?
Well, I can see it's about time I give you a few tips on how to handle your wife.
Me with a wife?
Well, it's never too soon to learn the ropes.
Don't worry, Pop. On the quarter a week you give me, I got enough trouble supporting myself.
Well, it won't hurt you to know anyway, so you listen good. Someday you and Marilyn might get married. Now, the way to keep a wife happy is to keep her busy.
I know. Mom's always busy.
Well, I trained her that way from the beginning. Why do you think I never hired a maid to do all the work around the house?
Because a maid makes more than you do?
Well, that's one reason. But the real reason is to give your mother something to do, to keep her occupied, see?
Oh, is that why you never help Mom out with the dishes and things?
Well, certainly. Believe me, it isn't that I'm lazy or that I don't love her. It's for the sake of our marriage. Why, there's many a time when I'm lying in the hammock out in the backyard, sipping a cold drink and reading the paper. And from where I'm lying, I can see your mother bent over a wash tub, her hair falling over her eyes and the sweat pouring off her forehead. Believe me, son, it takes every ounce of willpower for me to say, Riley, lay here in this hammock and let the little woman enjoy herself.
Was that you, Daddy?
Oh, hiya, Babs. Home from the movie so quick? Where's your mother?
Oh, in bed. She was so sleepy, we didn't even wait for the end of the movie. Poor mother, what a life.
What do you mean, poor mother? She's doing okay with her life. I only hope you do as good when you get married.
Oh, I'm never going to marry. What? I'm going to have a career. Marriage is all right for the older generation who have never known any other life than being a slave to a house and husband and children.
Babs, are you insinuating that your mother is nothing but a household dredge?
Well, isn't she? Have you noticed how tired Mother is at the end of the day?
Well, no, I'm always asleep when she finally comes to bed.
When you get down to it, what has she ever done but cook and sew and scrub and clean and bear you children?
Well, you're a fine one to talk. Where would you be if she didn't? And what's wrong with raising a family of kids? That's what's kept the human race going. My mother did it, and her mother before her did it, and her mother before her, and her mother, all the way down the line. And if they hadn't have done it today, I would have been a baboon.
Well, I'm not denying that.
Well, you better not.
All I say is, how can a woman cultivate her mind if she's hemmed in by four walls and chained to a stove? In all the years Mother's been married, has she ever had a vacation?
Why, she's had plenty. Why, in 1945, she... back there in 1938. Back in 1935, she... I remember in 1931, your mother had a 10-day vacation. No housework, no dishes. All meals served to her. Didn't move a finger.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Well, you should. That was in the hospital the time you got born.
Daddy.
You've been reading too many books. It's making you think, and you got to stop it. Your mother is perfectly happy. She loves housework.
Oh, you're just rationalizing.
I've never been rational in my life. Your mother's perfectly satisfied with things. Why, she wouldn't be willing to change places even with Lana Turner. I might be willing, but she wouldn't. Babs. Do you really think she's unhappy? Lots of women do housework and... Oh, you're just a kid. You don't know what you're talking about. Your mother's a happy woman, and I'll prove it to you.
Daddy, where are you...
I'm going to settle this once and for all.
Daddy, she's asleep.
Peg. Peg, wake up, darling. Peg, wake up, honey. Peg.
What? Oh, Riley. What's wrong?
Nothing. I just want to ask you something. Are you happy?
What?
Are you happy?
Chester Riley, do you mean to tell me you woke me up out of a sound sleep to ask me if... You're without a doubt the most thoughtless, the most inconsiderate man I've ever known.
I know all that, but tell me, Dumplin', are you happy with me?
Mother.
What time is it, Babs?
It's almost 8:30.
Dear, I overslept. Had such an awful time falling asleep again after your father woke me up. I'll get you your breakfast right away, dear.
Oh, I've had my breakfast.
You did?
Yes, Daddy made it.
He what?
Well, honest.
Oh, he probably left that kitchen in a mess.
Oh, no, he didn't. He did all the dishes and put them away. And now he's washing the floor.
Your father?
Uh-huh.
My husband?
Uh-huh.
Why, Dumplin', what are you doing out of bed?
Well, Riley, what's that tray for?
Well, that's your breakfast, sweetheart. I was just going to bring it to you in bed.
Babs, call the doctor.
Why? Are you sick, sweetheart? You've been working too hard. But from now on, it's going to be different. Here, you sit down here and eat your breakfast while it's hot. I'll make the beds now.
Riley, do you know what you're saying?
I know it's a little hard for you to understand... Especially after the way I treated you all these years. But Babs understands, don't you, Babs?
Understand what? Now, if this is some kind of joke,
it's
Riley...
It's no joke, Peg. From now on, I just want you to cultivate your mind and be happy. For 18 years, you've done your share. Now it's my turn to cook and sew and scrub and clean and bear you children.
All right, that's the first portion of The Life of Riley from 1948, starring William Bendix. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I have a thought on how to make everything even better.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Play classic radio 24/7.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm shocked to hear you say that.
Could you, if Steph and Todd said, hey, we want you to be on, you know, like a side channel, like not the regular WGN 720, because there's all kinds of things that need to be on, but maybe they have 721, right? You can just go a little bit more over and 24 hours a day of classic radio on 721. Mm-hmm. Would you do that?
Well, yeah, you just set it up on a computer. You just have it going 24/7. Well, just, you don't need a person.
You know, we just have microphones. We wear a microphone wherever we go. We go in grocery shopping, wherever you go, and we'll be playing the classic radio shows and then talking
about it. You just pre-record the ins and outs, and you have somebody who, you know, a computer can just play and just
Like Alexa.
Alexa, play.
Oops, we probably messed up people's
play
Alexas
WGN
out there.
Radio.
Sorry. All right, so let's take a break for news. When we come back, we'll have the conclusion to the life of Riley. Then it's Tales of the Texas...
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. I want to remind all of our listeners about our surprise boxes. They're going fast. We have three surprise boxes for our listeners. And surprise box one is classic radio shows on CD. Surprise box two, classic television and movies on DVD. And surprise box three are classic radio, Twilight Zone radio dramas on CDs. Learn all about the surprise boxes you can order for yourself or for a friend. Just go to WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. There will be a pop-up, and that pop-up will tell you all about the surprise boxes. But once the products are gone... they will be gone for good. We are not manufacturing any more of those products. Yes, Lisa?
Yes, Carl?
You were looking at the text in line.
Yeah, I was funny. It was a funny text. Somebody texted in that they love the life of Riley. And she, I think it's a she. I'm not sure why. Just a heads up, William Bendix's niece is one of our students, Kimberly Bendix.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know.
At her school?
I don't know any more than that.
Yeah, wow.
And somebody just texted, tell Carl no kimonos, and I have to approve all T-shirt designs.
Right, because I have no
fashion sense. Right, and I have to agree with that. So I'm going to
really
reign here.
I happen to think one of the things I am kind of good at
your fashion forward.
Is fashion.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe not right now.
I didn't say anything. I just looked down.
I mean, you know, I wear pretty nice boots usually and
shoes. You pretty much wear like jeans and maybe a black shirt or a black zip up or a black hoodie or a black jacket
not
or
all
a
the
black
time.
Sweater.
Not all the time.
No,
you
not
don't
all
see
the
me
time.
Every day. You only see me on Saturdays and Sundays.
That is so true.
On Saturdays and Sundays, I'm a little more cash.
I do see you during the week oftentimes.
Sometimes.
Though.
Well, you're going to see me Tuesday.
We have a meeting
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Big meeting.
A big meeting.
And I will be dressed sort of, I'm going to be a little surprise you, I
me
think.
Me too. I'm gonna
surprise you.
Dress,
what are you going to wear?
I'm going to wear something
you're
really
wear a dress?
Nice. No.
Why?
Well, I don't want to.
You don't want to wear a dress?
No, but it look nice, though.
I'm going to wear, then I'll wear a dress.
Okay, that'll be better.
Hang on a second.
Oh, there you go. A little slow
I'm
one more time.
I'm going to probably wear like a sports jacket, like a tweed, something, you know, for winter, and probably like corduroy pants or something like that.
Again, I'm just going to say that I am going to take the reins with the fashion of the T-shirts, and I will promise that they'll be great.
I have good fashion.
Oh, my daughter helped me. She's good at that. We have a WGN Radio Theater logo.
Yeah.
So we will use it, and I will put something together this week.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Okay. We'll work out
I think T-shirts is a good starting point.
I do, too.
So with T-shirts, then maybe we'll expand from there.
Right.
All right. Let's get back now to the life of Riley.
And now back to the life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. It's late Monday afternoon, and in the neighborhood the Rileys live in, Monday is always wash day. And so in every backyard on Blue View Terrace, you can observe a busy little homemaker industriously taking in the snow-white wash off the line. Ah, it's a sight to behold. In the yard of number 1309, for instance, there's something cute in a yellow apron. At 1311, there's something ravishing in a pink sunsuit. And at 1313, there's something gruesome in brown overalls.
There was a boy, a strange enchanted boy.
Hey, Peg, I got all the stuff off the line.
Oh, that's good, dear. Just leave it in the kitchen.
All right. No, I may as well iron it, too. Hey, Peg, how do you know when the iron's hot?
Well, test it to see if it sizzles.
Oh, well, that's easy.
Oh, Riley, not with your tongue.
Well, I'm still new at this sort of thing.
Oh, now, really, dear, you don't have to do my ironing. I'm perfectly happy.
Peg, I insist. You're taking it easy from now on. Why don't you go to a movie tonight, huh?
Well, if I had somebody to go with, the Babs is... Well, excuse me, dear. Hello? Oh, hello, dear.
Well, who is it, Peg?
Oh, it's Honeybee Gillis. Oh. No, I'm not busy, Honeybee. Oh, my ironing's being taken care of. No, not the laundry. Riley's doing it. Yes, Honeybee, I said Riley's doing it. And that's not all. He's washed my dishes, scrubbed the floor, and made the beds. No, he didn't get his head caught in the bus door again. No, it's all his idea. Oh, say, how about a movie tonight? Oh, well, why should you hang the curtains? Get Gillis to do it. Well, I don't see why not. If Riley can, why shouldn't he? Okay, I'll drop by for you in a little while. I'll call Connie and Ada and see if they want to come, too. All right, goodbye.
You're going to the cinema, Dumplin'?
Well, yes, but... Oh, I feel guilty leaving you here with all this ironing.
Oh, don't you worry about it. I'll take tomorrow night off. I got my poker game.
Riley, why are you doing all this?
Well, I told you, Peg, I just want you to be happy. I always did, but I had the wrong slant. Thank heaven I found out in time that my good looks ain't enough.
I raise you 2 cents.
I see you.
What do you got?
Straight.
Pair of jacks. Take the dough. Yeah, your deal, Sam.
Okay, give me the card. Hey, wait. Look out the window.
Riley.
He's coming to the game.
He's got the knife to show up here after what he's done?
What gall, that no good traitor.
Fellas, we gotta put Riley in his place once and for definite. We ignore him.
Okay, I'm dealing.
Well, hiya, gang. I made it just in time. Deal me in, Sam. Hey, Sam, you forgot to... No, never mind. You get me on the next round.
I drop.
I bet.
You win, Gillis.
Lester, you deal.
Well, what's new, guys? Hey, Lester, you forgot to... Oh, well, never mind. You get me on the next round.
I open for a nickel.
Check. I'll see you.
I'll take one card.
I'll take five.
Well, what's new, fellas?
I check.
Save your money, Gillis. I got a royal flush.
Lucky dog, you just beat me.
Hey, I tell you what, let's make this round deuce as well. I got a half a buck burning a hole in my pocket. Hey, Gillis, you forgot to... you get me on the... Hey, wait a minute. What's going on here?
I open for 2 cents.
Gillis, talk to me.
I raise you 3 cents.
Joe, Sammy.
I see you 3, and I raise you 2.
Fellas, what are you trying to do? Why are you acting like this? You've been treating me just like we treated Billy Getz when we found out he bet against the Dodgers. Fellas, can't you hear me?
You hear anything, Joe?
No. But I smell something.
That's me. My cigar. I'm Riley. Fellas, what did I do? Speak to me.
I had enough of this. This character can't take a hint.
I don't understand. Why don't you love me anymore? What did I do?
You know what you done. You made slaves out of all of us.
No, I didn't.
You've been waiting for your wife, ain't you? Well, your wife told my wife, and my wife told Joe's wife, and Joe's wife told Sam's wife. And now they got us doing it. Look at me. I'm getting flat feet from standing at the ironing board.
And how about me? I scrubbed so many pots with steel wool, my fingers are worn down to the elbow.
But I didn't mean no harm. I was only trying to do the right thing by my sweet Peg.
You had no business stirring up our wives. Why don't you let sleeping dogs lie?
Well, don't you want your wife to be happy?
Well, sure, but not at our expense. We had them all trained, but you had to be a wise guy. And in one night, you tore down 20 years of work. You're true, Riley. Finished. Washed up. So get away from us and stay away, you You wife lover.
Oh, what a mess. I only wanted to be a good husband. I never thought I'd be dropped by my best friends.
Why not? I've dropped some of my best friends.
Who's that?
It is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker. Greetings, Riley. You're looking fine. Very natural.
Well, hiya, Digger. What's new?
Oh, nothing much. Same old thing every day. You know me. I'm always in a rut.
Well, at least you're making dough.
No, I'm just breaking even. Whatever I take in goes out a few days later.
I guess it's tough to run a business these days.
Ah, yes. Costs are high. Do you know what I have to pay a pallbearer? $2 an hour and time and a half for overweight.
Digger, I've got my own troubles, all on account of I helped Peg with her housework.
And what's wrong with that? I help my dear spouse around the house, and she helps me in the shop. Why, without her, I wouldn't know who was coming or going.
Well, Peg ain't really the problem. It's the gang. Their wives found out what I was doing, so now they're making them work. Now the guys are sore. They're snubbing me.
Ah, man's inhumanity to man. Yeah. Cheer up, Riley. I once wrote a little poem on this very problem. I quote, "When a man looks down on me, my friend, I admit the world seems grim. But I don't despair, for in the end, I'll look down on him."
But I like these guys, if I could only square myself with them.
The love of your wife is more important, believe me.
If I could make them think that I was really boss in my house, you know, order Peg around. But I'd have to do it without Peg knowing about it. Hey, I got it. I got one chance.
That's the spirit. As we say in our profession, where there's life, there's hope.
Yes, sir, and there's another saying. You can't keep a good man down.
Would you care to bet? Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
Oh, hiya, Pop.
Listen, Junior, is your mother home?
Oh, no, she went out.
You're sure now?
I'm sure.
Good. Oh, I hope it works.
What works?
Well, I got a little plan, but, Junior, you got to help me.
What kind of a plan?
Well, it's kind of complicated, but all you have to do is this. Whenever I say now, you say yes, dear, but in a high voice.
Yes, dear?
Yeah, only high, like a girl.
Yeah, but why?
You know, to look at me, you wouldn't think I was smart.
Well, I think you're smart.
You do? Well, how do you know?
You're always telling me.
Yeah, but now I'm going to prove it to you. Watch how I operate. You'll learn something. Someday you'll be married.
Hello,
Gillis?
Who's that?
It's me, Riley.
I don't want to talk to you.
But I got something important to say.
Well, say it and say it fast.
Well, hold the wire a minute. My wife just came in, and there's something I got to tell her that can't wait.
Your wife?
Mom didn't come in.
Shh, I know. Yeah, just hold the wire. Peg, get in the kitchen right away and do those dishes. I'm sick and tired of doing the dirty work around this house. I'm the boss here, and you do what I say. Now, Junior.
Oh, but Pop,
now.
Yes, dear.
And that's not all you'll get if you don't do like I say. Hey, you still on, Gillis?
Yeah, come on.
Just hold the wire. And after you're through with the dishes, Peg, I want you to press my suits. I don't see why I have to pay the tailor good money when I got you around, so get moving. Now, Junior.
Yes, dear?
That'll learn you. The next time I say move, you move. Now get to work. Hello, Gillis. I'm sorry to keep you on the line, but I had a little matter to settle with the missus that just couldn't wait.
Yeah, I heard.
You got something to say to me, Gillis?
No, but there's someone here who has.
hello, Riley.
What a revolting development this is.
Folks, ask your friends and you'll find it's Prel. Prel. Wonderful Prel. Amazing Prel. Procter & Gamble's Radiant Cream Shampoo in the handy tube. People with dry hair, oily hair, gray hair, they all love it. Loretta Flannery, a nurse who lives in the Bronx, New York, says,
my gray hair has never looked so lovely as it has since using Prel. And I've done away with special rinses, too. I'm really delighted with Prel's results.
Try Prel yourself. You'll love it, too. First, because Prel leaves hair more radiant than any soap shampoo. Second, because Prel removes unsightly dandruff in as little as 3 minutes. Ask for Prel shampoo.
P-R-E-L-L, Prel shampoo. Leaves hair radiant, gleaming bright. Not a bit of dandruff is in sight. Comes in a tube, handy too. P-R-E-L-L, Prel shampoo.
Oh, honest Riley, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Just so you could get back in that poker game, you tried to make people believe that you could holler at me and get away with it.
Oh, Peg, that was just a gag. Nobody'd ever believe that I'd holler at you while you were around. you know what I mean. Gee, I was desperate. I just had to get back in that poker game. Those guys are all my friends.
Well, you can stop worrying about it. You're back in. I fixed it.
You did? Oh, we'll all be back together again. Pals, the four of us.
The eight of us.
Eight?
Yes, dear. See, now that you boys are helping us with the housework, we girls are going to have so much free time on our hands, we decided we might as well be in on the poker game, too.
It's a losing fight.
Friends, when we read statistics about traffic accidents, that 32,000 people were killed and 1,100,000 more injured in 1947, we're inclined to feel it's a warning to someone else. Actually, it should be a warning to you and me, to every pedestrian, to every driver of a motor vehicle. Procter & Gamble invites you to join us again next week to hear The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. William Bendix is currently starring in The Babe Ruth Story and Allied Artist Picture. The script is by Alan Lipscott and Reuben Shipp. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow. Digger Odell is John Brown. Babs is Barbara Eiler. The Life of Riley is produced by Irving Brecker. And remember, for radiantly clean, lovely hair, get the shampoo in the tube. P-R-E-L-L, Prel Shampoo. And this is Ken Niles reminding you to listen every Friday night when Procter & Gamble brings you a solid hour of laughs. First Red Skelton, and then The Life of Riley. Good night.
That's The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley, September 10th, 1948. Riley believes women enjoy housework. Well, he learned the hard way, did he not, Lisa Wolf?
Yes, he did.
And a great cast in there. We had Paula Winslow, who played Peg throughout the entire run. John Brown doubling on that show. He was Gillis, his friend, and he also played Digby Odell, the friendly undertaker. Good show from September 10th, 1948, The Life of Riley. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. We have another hour of classic radio coming your way. We're going to tune into Tales of the Texas Rangers. And, you know, the interesting thing about this show, Lisa, was it was very similar to Dragnet. And one time, Stacy Keach Sr., Stacy Keach's dad, when I licensed this series from him And I didn't know Stacy Jr. yet. I actually met Stacy Keach Sr. first and got to be friends with him. And then I met his son, you know, the actor who played Mike Hammer. And, of course, then I cast Stacy to star in the Twilight Zone radio dramas. But he told me that he officed with Jack Webb. They shared an office on the same floor together, and they were friends. And Jack Webb was very successful with Dragnet, okay? And so they were talking one day. He's like, yeah, I got to produce a show like Dragnet, you know? And Stacy Sr. liked Westerns. He was a big Western fan, and he thought about it and said, hey, what if I created something similar to Dragnet but with the Texas Rangers? Because that's the oldest law enforcement division in the United States of America, the Texas Rangers. And so he kind of modeled the show after the success of his friend, Jack Webb. And there you have it. And it was a very big success. It was on the air for a few years. It made a transition to television. And he was able to attract Joel McRae, who was a big movie star, to play the lead. And that's all she wrote.
No new ideas.
That's
right?
How it was done. That's how Tales of the Texas Rangers came about. And we're going to have that in our next hour here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night bringing you your favorite classic radio shows, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Suspense, The Whistler, The Great Gildersleeve. My brother hates The Great Gildersleeve.
I know.
But he likes Duffy's Tavern.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you that.
Well, that's good to know.
My mom loves
Life with Luigi.
And The Story of Dr. Kildare. Those are her two favorite. I'm a big Boston Blackie nut. Mike likes Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. You like My Favorite Husband.
Yep.
I think Roger is a big, maybe he likes The Shadow. And Jack
Roger
Benny.
Roger likes a lot of things.
So, we play it all here on the WGN Radio Theater every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And we are in hour three. We have Tales of the Texas Rangers coming your way, a 1951 broadcast. That's this hour. But right now it's time to play Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Star Wars Empire Strikes Back.
Never seen it.
Well, it doesn't matter.
I've never seen one Star Wars movie. Did you know that?
Well,
I might be the only person on the face of the earth that has never seen a Star Wars movie.
Well, you'll give an educated guess. And there's really only three choices. So we've got three quotes. One of them is from Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. Two of them are not. You'll give us a guess. Let me know which one is. Carl will give us a guess. Hopefully he'll get it wrong. Then you will win a Twilight Zone 4-CD set, whether you get it right or you get it wrong. We appreciate your playing the game.
All right. Call us now, 312-981-7200. We'll do the fourth caller, 312-981-7200. Call us now. Play the game with us. Play Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. And we'll do that right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Thomas. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got through.
I'm so glad that you got through. You're caller number four. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually on the road right now, driving.
Terrific. Well, drive safely. I'm going to give you three quotes. You tell me which one is the quote from Star Wars Empire Strikes Back.
All right.
Number one, whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster. Number two, this is a dangerous time for you, and you will be tempted by the dark side. Number three, if you gaze long enough into the abyss will gaze back into you.
It's two.
Number two.
Okay.
Carl, is he right?
Thomas seems very intelligent because he's able to drive and talk on the phone at the same time. And he's being careful, so that's good. So yep. I'm going to agree with Thomas. I think it's number two. So let's play.
All right, what say you, Shante?
This is a dangerous time for you, and you will be tempted by the dark side.
You got that one right. You knew that, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. I love Star Wars.
I'm so glad you got in. Carl got to reap your knowledge on that one. So congratulations. You are a winner either way, but you really did get it right. So we're happy, and we're going to send you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set for playing the game. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Thomas. All right, he's a big winner, and guess what, Lisa?
You got that right.
I'm batting 500. Well, I've come back strong.
Well, that's only because you piggybacked onto Thomas's knowledge.
Well, yeah, he sounded very smart.
He absolutely knew that was
well,
right.
Well, when I heard Dark Side, I thought, okay, that must be from Empire Strikes, because I've heard of that Dark Side.
Well,
you
could go to Pink Floyd and you can say, I'll see you on the Dark Side of the Moon.
True.
So
but I'm pretty sure Dark Side is like something with the Star Wars. I don't watch any of those.
It could be, or it could be a Pink Floyd song. So
could be.
We'll go with that.
All right. Well, very good, Lisa Wolf.
All right. Well, I look forward
Not
to
Not bad. You're more... pretty good.
That's why I get paid the big bucks
this
around
This is true.
Here.
Absolutely true. All right. Time for Tales of the Texas Rangers. It was a modern Western drama. A lot of people think, oh, this was set back in the 1800s. No, it was set in the 1940s and 50s, right when it was being broadcast. And like its predecessor, Dragnet, Tales of the Texas Rangers adapted actual police case files. Now, Texas Ranger Jace Pearson was portrayed by Joel McRae. And as I say, it was in present day, and Pearson used the latest scientific techniques to identify criminals. And it was produced and directed by Stacy Keach Sr., Stacy's dad. Good old Stacy Keach from the Twilight Zone radio dramas and Mike Hammer, and he's the voice of American Greed,
yes.
And he's on a lot of different things. He is a great actor, of course, and a good friend of ours. His dad created this series, and he, Stacy, licenses this series to us on behalf of his dad. So let's tune this in. Let's go back to January 21st, 1951. This is called Blood Harvest. Here is part one now of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. And 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. The files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Blood Harvest.
It is a moonless midnight, September 16th, 1947. A truck without lights is parked in a cultivated field several miles from Fairvale, Texas. In the darkness, two men are perspiring freely as they load bales of seasoned alfalfa onto the truck.
How many more we got to go, Slim?
15, 20, that's all.
Now we can get it all on here, then. This'll be the last load.
That suits me fine. The sooner you get off the place with it, the better. Come on.
Yeah, whoa, take it easy, will you, Slim? How about time out for a smoke?
Smoke? You out of your mind, Trent?
Oh, we're a half mile from the house, and besides, you said Mullen was asleep.
Look, don't give me an argument.
All right, but I moved more than 200 bales of this stuff tonight. I'm going to rest for a minute. If you don't like it, load the rest out yourself.
Okay, don't get hot about it. I'm just as tired as you are. I'll sit on a running board.
Yeah. Mullen's sure going to be surprised when he gets a look at this field tomorrow.
Yeah, he sure is. What do we get for this stuff?
About $30 a ton.
Ain't bad. Bound to clear almost $200 apiece.
Yeah. Could make more than that running a couple of head of cattle without working up this pig sweat, though.
Sure, smart guy. Run cattle and get picked up and sent to the pen. Maybe there ain't as much money in alfalfa, but one thing about it, there ain't no brand marks on the bales either. Nobody can say it ain't yours once you get in the clear with it.
Yeah, I guess you got a point. Think Mullen's liable to suspicion you when he finds his field stripped tomorrow?
Oh, not a chance. I'm an old war buddy, ain't I? And he saw me taking a sleeping pill before we turned in tonight. At least he thinks he saw me take it.
It's a good thing he ain't seeing you take this alfalfa, or you'd lose your job for sure.
After tomorrow, I can afford to lose it. Farm work ain't for men, it's for horses. Hey, come on, we rested long enough. I want to get you away from here.
Okay.
Now, give me that pitchfork. I'll push those last two bales back and make more room on the tail of the truck.
Here it is.
I got a real surprise tomorrow.
What's the matter, Slim?
Shh. There's something moving.
I don't hear nothing.
There it is again.
Maybe it's Mullen. Maybe he woke up.
Get quiet, Trent.
Who's on this field?
It is him.
You better answer me. I can see the outline of your truck.
Slim, I got to start up and get out of here.
No. He woke up. He wants to know I'm not in the house.
So pile in the truck and come with me, quick.
Hey, go to jail, lady, you fool. No. I'll slide her on behind the truck. You stay here until he comes up to you.
Yeah, but I don't...
Those, I tell you.
Who are you? Talk up fast.
It's me, Mullen, Harry Trent.
Harry Trent, huh? You lost, Trent? What are you doing in my field in the middle of the night with a truck full of my alfalfa?
Well...
Save it, Trent. Where's Slim? Where'd he run to?
I didn't run any place, Mullen.
You know...
Don't move. There's a pitchfork you feel against your ribs. Just march back to the house.
What are you going to do to him, Slim?
I'm going to lend him my bottle of sleeping pills and see to it that he takes an overdose of them. It's nice, clean, and quiet.
That idea'd be great, Slim, if I'd hold still for it. But I ain't about to hold still.
Look out, Slim. Punch him, Trent. Let go of that fork, Mullen. Now, Mullen, here's something you don't have to hold still for. But you'll hold still this time.
You killed him. You killed him. You shut up.
Stop that and shut up.
We gotta run, Slim. We gotta
get out. Do nothing. Get that load out of here and sell it like we planned. Then keep your mouth shut. If you don't, I'll shut it for you.
Just before dawn of the next morning, a hound from a neighboring farm came across the body of Robert Mullen. Its baying attracted its master, who called the sheriff. The sheriff requested aid from the Texas Rangers. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned.
There's the body, Ranger. Black hound dog over there came across it this morning and set up a holler. Owner heard her, knowed she'd found something and come running.
I see. Which one owns the dog?
Fellow in the Mackinac, Sam Richardson. His farm adjoins this one along the east fence.
Who are the other two men?
Harry Trent. Farm on the north is his, and Slim Fireman. Slim worked this place with Mullen. They was buddies in the war or something. You want to talk to him?
Yeah, in a minute. Anybody touch that pitchfork?
Nope, not even me yet. I figured it must be the murder weapon, blood all over the prongs. Hard to read prints off that handle, though.
Yeah. Marks on the body show Mullen was jabbed twice.
Once would have been plenty. I sent for the JP, but I don't think we need an inquest to tag this as murder.
No, but he'll have to order a medical examination to establish the time of death. Mullen felt kind of funny. His left leg bent in under him.
Well, there's a reason for that. Pull up the pants leg and you'll see.
Yeah. That explains it, all right. Artificial leg. He in some kind of an accident?
If you can call Okinawa an accident. He hit the beach there with the 1st Marines. Lost a leg and an eye. Left eye's glass.
He could have picked an easier life than farming. Did he have any family?
Sister, Ellie, lives over at Holtzville. Guess I'll have to bring her the news.
You could call the local minister at Holtzville. He can tell her better than you can. We can drive over and see her later and find out if she knows anything.
It's a good idea.
I'll talk to these other fellows now.
Okay. They don't seem to know much, though.
They may know when Mullen was last seen alive. It's not often a man gets pitchforked to death out in his own fields.
Yeah. Fellas, this here's Ranger Jace Pearson. Ranger, this is Sam Richardson.
Howdy. Hello.
Harry Trent.
Hello.
Slim Fireman.
Glad to know you.
Richardson, the sheriff tells me your dog found the body.
That's right.
Oh, it must have been about 4 a.m. I was just getting out of bed when I heard her, so I come a-running.
You always run out and investigate when you hear one of your hounds baying?
Nope, but that black hound of mine's a good one. And I ain't never heard a dog's hound off like she did.
I see. When did you see Mullen last alive?
Yesterday morning. Passed each other along the fence and said howdy.
How about you, Mr. Trent?
I hadn't seen him for a couple of days.
Reckon Slim here saw him last, then.
How about it?
Well, sure, reckon I did. Last night, we ate, and then I turned in early.
Hmm. Then this happened during the night?
Must have, as far as I know.
Why would Mullen come out to this field at night?
I don't know. I didn't even know he'd left the house until Richardson here come pounding on the door and woke me up this morning after he found the body.
You live right on the place, Slim?
Huh?
How come you didn't hear Richardson's dog?
Well, I was sleeping kind of heavy. I took a sleeping pill last night. Must have knocked me out good. Had a rough day yesterday.
What do you mean, rough?
Well, all the extra chores, loading the alfalfa from this field onto the truck.
I was wondering how come there were so few bales from such a big cutting.
Well, Mullen had a buyer for most of it, I reckon. Anyhow, he carted it off.
Yeah, I see the tire tracks. Any idea who he sold it to?
He didn't say.
Think somebody paid him for the stuff, then came back to rob him of the money, Jace?
Could be, Sheriff. Except that Mullen made the robbing mighty convenient by coming out into this field at night. When we learn why he came out here, we'll be learning a lot. After a while, the justice of the peace showed up and took charge of the body. The sheriff made his call to the minister at Holtzville so he could break the news to Mullen's sister. We gave her a couple of hours to get a grip and then drove over to see her.
He was only here last Sunday, spending the day with him, playing with a baby and arguing with Dan.
Who's Dan?
My husband.
What were they arguing about?
What? I didn't mean a real argument. Politics, cost of living, you know how men get talking. And now he's dead.
Take it easy, Ellie. That's your brother's picture over the fireplace, isn't it?
Yes, in his uniform. Just before he went overseas in the war. Before he was hurt.
Anybody you know of who might gain anything by having your brother out of the way?
No. He never made any enemies.
Guess it was robbery like we figured before, Jace. No money on him and none in the house that we could find.
Might have had time to bank the crop money yesterday. We can check that with the bank.
Might as well go then. Ellie, you shouldn't be here alone at a time like this.
The minister's coming back later.
Why don't you call Dan and have him come home from work?
He's away for a few days on a business trip.
Away on a business trip, huh? Who's he working for?
He's buying and selling for Hatton's Feed and Grain Company. Don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
Well, if there's anything I can do, just holler. Bye, Ellie.
Goodbye, ma'am.
Goodbye. You gotta find out who killed my brother. You can't let him get away with it.
We'll try not to, ma'am.
I never thought how her husband's job might fit into this.
Buying and selling feed and grain, huh?
Mullen sold that alfalfa. Most likely man he'd sell it to would be his own brother-in-law.
It's something we're going to check on. Hop in.
We'll put out a radio pickup for him?
No, we'll drive over to the Hatton Feed and Grain. They'll know where he is. We'll pick him up ourselves. Hatton's Feed and Grain Company told us the area that Mullen's brother-in-law, Dan, was working. We caught up to him next morning, making a selling stop at a dairy farm.
That must be Dan's car there by the barn. Hatton Company emblem on it.
Yeah, let's find him.
There he is. Other end of the barn, leaning on a stall. Must be the owner he's talking to.
Call him down here.
We don't have to. He sees us coming this way now.
Watch out for any sudden moves, just in case.
Howdy, Sheriff. Is it for me?
Ranger and I'd like a word with you.
Reckon it's about Ellie's brother.
You heard about it, huh?
Yeah, on my car radio this morning. I called Ellie a little while ago. She told me you'd been to see her. A couple of stops I just got to make around here, and then I'm heading for home.
When did you see Mullen last?
2 days ago when I started out on this trip.
You stopped by his place?
That's right.
Social call or business?
Business. Made a bid on his alfalfa. We just about finished sweating, ready to be hauled for storage.
How'd you pay him for it, by cash or company check?
I didn't pay him for it, Ranger. He said it wasn't for sale.
You better be sure of that, Dan.
What do you mean? He
He means that that alfalfa was sold and moved just before Mullen was killed, the same day you stopped there.
Whoever told you that's a lie.
It's no lie, Dan. We saw it with our own eyes. Everything was hauled from there except maybe a dozen bales.
I don't care what you saw. I know that alfalfa wasn't for sale, to me or anybody else.
What makes you so sure of that?
I'll tell you what makes me so sure. You can check it with the bank. Bob told me he'd made arrangements for a bank loan to buy 20 head of dairy cattle. That's why I'm sure. He was getting them in next month, and he needed that alfalfa for winter forage. He couldn't have sold it, not to anybody.
You are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson.
God, I hate when they do my job. He just said what it is, and I don't have to... Now I
You've
can't,
got absolutely nothing to do.
Say.
That's so
I
sad.
I was going to say that that's Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Joel McRae.
We'll get back to it.
All right.
Yeah, we'll get back to it after the news. Yeah, we're listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, Joel McRae. And what do we have coming up next week? Do you know?
I sure do.
Ooh,
we've got Boston Blackie,
Boston,
which is your favorite.
Lisa. Boston Blackie.
I know.
That's the best. Great job of picking Boston Blackie.
Well, you're welcome. We've got the Burns and Allen show, which, I mean, how can you go wrong?
Right.
And Nightbeat, that's on Saturday night.
That has your favorite guy, Frank Lovejoy.
Well, he's got a, you know, kind of like a porn star name. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. It's just a funny
Lisa.
Name.
Lisa.
It's just a funny name.
Lisa.
What? Then we have the Jack Benny program, one of my favorites, the Lux Radio and Lux Radio Theater.
Yeah, but that's an hour.
That's an hour show.
Yeah.
So we just have Jack Benny and then an hour of Lux Radio split into two parts.
Naughty, naughty on you.
No, it's just a name.
Boston Blackie's my favorite. I can't wait to hear it. Which show, do you know?
I
Which
don't.
Which one of the Boston Blackie episodes it is?
I don't have that with me
You
at
don't
the
have that? Oh, all right.
No, but I will post that on our Facebook page in the next couple of days.
Yeah. There's something, I guess it goes way back to when I first started collecting classic radio shows. And I've told this story before. It'll only take a second. But way back when I first got hooked on classic radio at age 12, there was a company selling classic radio shows on cassettes, okay? And cassettes was a new thing because 8-tracks were sort of going by the wayside, and cassette was the newfangled thing. I thought it was the coolest thing, a cassette. Well, there was and I had no money. I was growing up. I was a kid. I was 12 years old. And so there was a cassette. I think it was $6 is what I remember it being, $6 for an hour-long cassette. And on one side was Lights Out. And on the other side was Boston Blackie. And I had never heard of Boston Blackie. I had no idea what Boston Blackie was. Had no idea. I didn't know it was a detective. But I wanted the Lights Out episode because I liked the mysteries. And so I saved up, you know, a quarter here, a quarter there. And when I'm serious. This is what it was like. When I finally got $6, I sent it in and I got the cassette, right? And I listened to Lights Out right away, popped it in, and was like, oh, man, that's scary. And then I'm like, I'll throw this Boston Blackie, whatever the heck it is, on. And there you go.
You know, it reminds me of, like, Side B, when you used to buy a 45
that's
record.
That's exactly what it's
and
like.
And you buy it for the one side of the one song that you love, and then you flip it over and see if you like it or you don't.
See how smart you are, Lisa.
I know.
Never cease to amaze me how smart you are.
I know. And I remember buying the 45. They were 99 cents.
Yeah, 99 cents.
At Kmart.
Wow. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll have news, and then the conclusion to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. Also, thank you, Bill Curtis. We are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers. This broadcast is from January 21st, 1951. What were you doing back on January 21st, 1951, Lisa?
I was probably playing with my cassette recorder.
Were you even a glimmer in your daddy's little eye?
Yeah, I was about 14 then.
Daddy's eye?
Mm-hmm.
1951. I'm trying to think. We were out of World War II a few years. I think Korean War was happening right around there, about the Korean War. And this is a show called Blood Harvest, and it stars Joel McRae. And also in the cast, we had great supporting players, Herb Vigran, Tony Barrett, Lou Krugman, Tom Kelly, Stacy Keach doing the producing and directing on this. Let's tune in to the conclusion of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
We continue now with tonight's case, Blood Harvest, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
Mullen's bank verified the loan for buying the dairy herd. Unless he changed his mind suddenly, Mullen wouldn't have sold the feed he'd been needing for his own stock. The sheriff and I headed back for Mullen's farm.
Don't see Slim around any place.
Maybe into the funeral home. Let's take a look at the barn.
We've looked at the barn before, Jace. No way we could miss a couple hundred bales of alfalfa.
No, but we might have missed something we weren't looking for the last time.
Just look up. You see the loft is almost empty. He didn't need much forage with just one horse to feed.
I'm not looking for forage. Here's what I'm interested in.
Just a bunch of scrap lumber.
And a keg of nails. Just about what he'd need to build stalls for that dairy herd. Now, Mullen was too far ahead with his plans to change his mind, if you ask me.
Sure looks that way.
Where'd Mullen keep his hay truck? That vehicle shed out back?
Yeah.
Come on.
What do you want to see, Jace?
The truck that Slim said he and Mullen loaded that alfalfa on.
Looks like the shed is locked.
Huh? Oh, no, it isn't. Just a wooden peg stuck through the lock ratchet. We can pull it.
I'll help you roll it back. Yeah. There's the truck.
This the only truck he's got?
Yep.
If this truck was used to haul alfalfa bales, they must have been tighter than any bales I've ever seen. Look at that truck bed. Clean as a whistle. Not a straw on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Sheriff. This is the truck that was loaded out in that field.
You can't be sure of that just because the bed is clean.
No, but I can be sure by the tires. Look at them. Tread's worn down almost smooth. The tire marks we saw out in the field were well marked. Plenty of tread.
Hey, that's right. They were.
Come on. Take Mullen's horse from the barn, throw a saddle on it. I'll get charcoal out of my trailer and we'll take a little ride.
Where to?
Out to the fields first where I can make a plaster cast of that tire tread. Truck was loaded heavy. Impression was deep enough to hold.
Why can't we drive out?
I want to cut across the neighboring farms, too, and see if we can find any matching treads in other fields. We'll see the ground better as we move on horseback.
It's as easy to drive around to the farms and check the tires on the trucks like we did here.
Yeah, but I don't want to be seen doing that. If we scare the man we're after, he might run before we get to him.
Okay, I'll have this nag ready in a minute. If you're right, Jace, Slim Ferryman has been lying about moving the alfalfa. Easy, boy.
We'll find out. If he was lying, it'll explain why Mullen was out to that field at night. Because it'll mean that the crop was being stolen at night. And he was killed when he saw who was stealing it.
How long does it take that cast to dry, Jace?
Yeah, be ready in a minute.
Liable to be a lot of truck tires with that same tread.
Sure, but this piece I'm making a cast of has a cut mark across part of the tread.
Oh, I see.
Find that same mark again someplace else. We can make another cast and use for evidence. Here, this is dry now. How's that, Sheriff?
Good, clear impression, Jace.
Come on. Let's ride. Check the neighboring farms. Sam Richardson's place was clear, and so were the two others. And we cut through the north fence to Mullen's farm and into the acreage owned by Harry Trent.
Looks like Trent moved his alfalfa crop, too, Jace. Fields are clear.
Yeah. Where's the farmhouse?
Other side of that patch of trees.
Good. That'll keep us covered. Keep your eyes on the ground.
Right. Hey, hold it.
Ooh.
Hold it.
What is it?
Nothing. Tractor marks there. Not what we're looking for.
Oh. Well, let's keep going.
Hey,
well,
yeah.
There's quite a bit of straw on the ground over to the right, Sheriff. Let's move that way.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, Sharky.
Yeah. Probably Trent had his bale stacked there.
Huh? He sure did. That's what we're looking for. Ooh, ooh, charcoal.
Ooh, easy. Ooh. Kind of dim, Jace, but they're the same tread, all right.
Yeah, it looks like the same cut mark in the tread. I'm going to make another cast. Then after dark, we can slip in and take a look at Trent's barn and his truck. We slipped back that night. Trent's truck tires were the ones we were looking for. Heavy duty. We went from the vehicle shed to the barn.
Pretty dark night, Jace. Hardly seeing here either.
Yeah, I didn't see enough to find what I want. There's a ladder to the left. Right, here it is. All right, I'm going to climb up. Give me your flashlight.
Here you are. Anything up there?
Just a few bales. I reckon Trent sold most of his alfalfa crop, too.
Even if he had Mullen's crop here, no way we could prove it.
That's where you're wrong, Sheriff. If Trent had it, we're gonna prove it. We cleared the farm without being spotted. Got to my car and drove back to town. Robert Mullen's wake had just ended at the funeral home as we pulled up at the sheriff's office.
We didn't have to be so careful out at Trent's place, Jace. There he is going toward his car. Must have come in to pay his respect.
He just came out of the door of that cafe. Oh, look who's in there at the counter.
Slim Ferryman.
Yeah, we could use some coffee. Come on.
Good night.
See you tonight. Yes.
Sheriff and Ranger.
Howdy, May. How's the coffee?
Try stirring it, and it'll fling the spoon right back at you.
That sounds strong enough. Pour a couple.
All right.
Mind if we sit with you, Slim?
Help yourself. Yeah, got a line on who killed Mullen yet?
No. Too bad Mullen never mentioned the name of the man he was selling that alfalfa to.
No, too bad.
You think he might have mentioned it to one of the neighbors, Sam Richardson, maybe, or Harry Trent?
No, I don't think so.
I guess it isn't likely. Man who doesn't tell his plans to an old buddy living right in the same house with him, I guess he wouldn't tell anybody.
Yeah, here's your Java, Sheriff.
Thanks.
Ranger.
You and Mullen go all through the war together?
No, just part of it.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you meet? South Pacific?
No, here in the States. I was a ward man at the General Hospital.
Oh. Then you weren't in action together.
No.
I see. I thought you were real close friends.
We were. Who says we weren't?
Well, take it easy. Nobody said so. I just meant you weren't as close as buddies are when they're under fire together.
We were plenty close, and don't let nobody tell you different. Mullen was the best friend I ever had, see?
Sure.
When you get the guy who killed him, I'd like to be there to watch when they strap the rat in the electric chair.
I know just how you feel. I'll do my best to arrange that for you.
Here's your money, May.
Oh, thanks, Slim.
I'm going back to the farm and get some sleep if I can. Hardly had any since this happened.
It's too bad. Maybe you ought to take one of your sleeping pills.
Yeah. Maybe I will. Good night. Night, Sheriff.
Night, Slim. He sure rattled his teeth, Jace. He was pretty frank about his service record, though.
Only because he knew I could check it if he lied. Let's skip this coffee. I want to see Ellie and her husband, Dan. Ellie and Dan were keeping a lonesome night vigil beside the body of Robert Mullen. We beckoned Dan outside.
What is it? I won't leave Ellie alone too long.
I'm afraid you'll have to leave her alone for a while if you want to help us spring the trap on the man who killed your brother-in-law.
You know who did it?
I think so. I need your help to prove it.
You gotta help her. What do you want?
How much acreage did Mullen have in alfalfa? It looked like 7 or 8 acres.
8's right.
You know how much it'd yield?
About 2 ton to an acre, 16 ton all told. That's a good yield for this year. He took good care of his land. Why?
I'll tell you in a minute. Sheriff, we saw Trent's alfalfa acreage. I'd say he'd cut about 6 acres.
But then? You don't have to say about. 6 acres is right.
How do you know?
I bought Trent's alfalfa crop from my company.
Good. How much?
Almost 12 ton. Same acre yield as Bob Mullen.
12 tons. Are you sure that's all?
Of course I'm sure.
The feed and grain companies keep a record of everybody they purchase from?
Sure.
Can the lots be identified? I mean, are they tagged or stored in such a way you could tell who they were brought from?
Yeah, they are.
What are you aiming at, Jace?
Final proof to break Trent down? Dan, I want you to come with me. Get one of the bales Trent sold to your company, and then we're going to wake up every other feed and grain buyer in the county to see if he sold any more than 12 tons. We got what we were after. The day after Mullen was killed, Trent had sold an additional 15 tons to another company almost 50 miles away. We got a sample bail and brought it back to the sheriff's office. Hey, put it down here, Dan.
Yeah.
So Trent did sell more of it, huh?
15 tons more.
Don't see how you can tell this bale from the other one.
You can when you weigh them. Trent's bales averages 110 pounds to the bale on his own stuff. The bales in this second batch are tighter packed, about 140 pounds to the bale.
Hey, wait a minute, Ranger. There's something else different, too. I just noticed. Look at the wire on the bales.
Looks the same to me.
Maybe, but you're not as used to seeing baling wire as I am. Wire on the bales Trent sold me is 16 gauge. Wire on this other bale is 14 gauge. Bob Mullen always used 14 gauge.
Come on, Sheriff. Let's get Trent and make him talk. Once he opens up, we'll see where Slim Ferriman fits.
Chase, I see the picture as clear as you do now, but how are we going to prove that this second batch of alfalfa was stolen from Mullen's place?
We don't have to prove it. Trent's the one who has to do the proving. We do things big in Texas, but he's the first man who ever sold 27 tons of alfalfa from 6 acres. Let's go. It was still dark when we turned in the road to Trent's farmhouse, and the light went on inside as we came to a stop. Trent came to the door.
Oh, it's you fellas. I heard a car.
You thought it was somebody else?
No, I didn't know who it was.
Oh, I thought you might be expecting Slim Ferriman.
No, why would Slim come here?
Take a few lessons in farming, maybe? So you could show him how to raise 27 tons of alfalfa on 6 acres?
You must have raised that much, Trent, because you sold that much.
But 15 tons of it belonged to Mullen. He baled heavier and used 14-gauge wire while you used 16-gauge.
I bought Mullen's crop.
Why would he sell it to you instead of his brother-in-law, Dan?
I mean, I hauled it for him. He thought the price would be better someplace else.
Not enough to haul it 50 miles. And besides, you made that sale yesterday, after Mullen was killed.
I had to do it. I was in a trap. If I told you about it, Slim would have killed me.
Did he kill Mullen? Were you an eyewitness?
Yeah. I saw him do it. I never touched Mullen.
Where's Slim now?
I thought you were him when you drove up. He's coming here this morning. I got to check for Mullen's alfalfa, and Slim was going to pick it up and take it someplace for cash. And
there's a car coming now, Jace.
Handcuff Trent to the doorknob of that closet. Quick.
Right.
I didn't kill
him. Shut up.
Come on, Sheriff. Slim won't stop. He'll see my car as he makes the turn for the house.
He saw it. He's turning around. Get his tires. That stopped him. He's running for it, Jace.
Move off to that side. The car is shielding him.
Right.
Stop running, Slim. You can't beat a bullet.
He ducked into the barn, Jace.
Circle in from the side and keep the door covered. I'm going in after him. The gray of dawn was washing across the sky, but the barn was in deep shadow. I slipped in along the side wall and moved slowly toward the stalls. I didn't see what came at me. I just sensed it hurtling through the air, and I threw myself to the side, hit the ground, and fired.
You get him, Jace? You all right?
Yeah. He threw that sickle at me from the stall. I didn't see him. Don't even know how I hit him. I just felt it coming and fired.
Mighty good aim. He's dead.
So is Bob Mullen. Let's get Trent and take him in.
For his complicity in the robbery and murder of Robert Mullen, Harry Trent was sentenced to Huntsville Penitentiary for 50 years.
And here again is the star of our show, Joel McRae, with another interesting story about the Texas Rangers.
The equipment of a Texas Ranger includes a pair of 6 guns, a rifle, a shotgun, and other weapons. Not to mention his horse, horse trailer, automobile, and scientific crime detection apparatus. However, there's been a fictional addition to the equipment as the result of motion pictures, an addition that has the Rangers scratching their heads ruefully. It came to the attention of one Ranger recently as he passed 2 small boys on the street. The small fry turned to stare at him. The Ranger got quite a shock when he heard one of them say, "Oh, shucks, he ain't a real Texas Ranger. He ain't got a guitar." Well, such is the influence of modern fiction. But fortunately, the criminals know the truth. When they see a real Texas Ranger, they don't look for a guitar.
They look for the quickest means of transportation. They want distance, not music. Good night, folks. See you next week.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Frenchie. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Lou Krugman, Herb Vigran, Tom Tully, Wilms Herbert, Betty Moran, and Gigi Pearson. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
Three chimes mean good times, Lisa.
Here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Absolutely right. That's Tales of the Texas Rangers, January 21st, 1951, with Blood Harvest, starring Joel McRae, a show produced, directed, created by Stacy Keach Sr., the daddy of our good pal Stacy Keach, the host of the Twilight Zone radio dramas.